Affairs. And Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo. Well, thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Manchester and Jahangir. I mean, your overall thoughts about the significance of this move by Nicaragua?
Well, I think it's important. What we see is that countries from what are traditionally called the developing world are increasingly taking a stand against oppression and injustice linked to Western support for the state of Israel. Who would have thought that Germany, a leading Western power, would be brought before the ICJ by Nicaragua? Right. So I think it's significant, but I think, you know, it's not just Germany here that's on trial or Israel at the ICJ. I think what's really on trial is the whole basis of the Western moral and international order that mm-hmm. have always told us it's the rules-based order, everybody must follow it. So I think this is a test in which either the Western rules-based order, moral order will collapse, or there might be some realignment or a revival of it coming from the global south, but we've yet to see that.
Mm. Yeah, well, definitely interesting times to see, as you said, Nicaragua taking Germany to court. And what about that, Glenn? I mean, have we transitioned from a time when countries feared even criticizing the Israeli regime because of the repercussions they would have to deal with from the United States for standing up against the regime's atrocities? How do you see it?
Well, I agree. I think this conflict has to be seen in the wider context in the world, which is the international distribution of power is shifting very quickly from the West more towards the East. And with this, we see indeed the entire framing of the world order being challenged, because keep in mind that after the Cold War, the West under U.S. leadership began to establish what they call the rules-based international order, which is a rival to international law, because under this so-called rules-based order, the U.S. and its allies has the prerogative to violate sovereignty, that is to invade, interfere in domestic affairs, you know, change borders if necessary, all in the service of liberal ideals, so human rights and democracy, allegedly. So this was a hegemonic order, but now we see that the key, not only is the power shifting, but the key legitimacy of this whole order, the idea that the West was somehow acting altruistically in the benefit of humanity, is now being very openly challenged. And we see this in Gaza, this Germany, which is supposed to be a new moral power, having learned from history, is now being accused of essentially assisting genocide. And it's not an unreasonable accusation either, because the ICJ did argue that this was a likely case of genocide and called for protecting the Palestinians. And instead, the Germans have been supplying more weapons. So this could make Germany complicit in genocide. Now, obviously, the trial is still ongoing, but this, I think, reflects both the power shifting away from the West, but also the legitimacy for how the West would use this power in the international system. So okay. It's very significant.
Okay. Well, Jahangir, how likely is it that these countries, which are complicit in this genocide, will answer for their crimes against, given the fact that the ICJ has no mechanism to enforce its rulings?
Well, I think that's the test. We know that the West and Israel have been above all international laws. There doesn't seem to be a mechanism, and the ICC, which has some power, hasn't even started to investigate what's happened in Gaza. So, I'm not hopeful myself. I think the international order will collapse, and that people won't be held to account. And what will happen then is there will be a loss of trust. And I think, you know, the Muslim world or people in the global south will start to set up their own mechanisms to try people and bring countries to account. We might see, different types of order emerging or competing orders emerging. These rules and laws were not really meant for the global south and the sort of non-European countries. They were meant for the hegemony of the West and the European order that's ruled the world for about 500 years and for their interests. So we shouldn't hold any great hope, but then let's see if the international order can adjust, can bring people to account. And I think the hope lies in civil society, really, within Western countries, which is taking a different direction to the governments. You see lots of civil society actors, groups, demanding justice because they can see the grave injustice that's taking place, and that may force a shift in the power balance. We're yet to see.
Well, Glenn, 30% of Israel's arms come from Germany, and 69% of its arms come from the United States, and this has continued during this genocide. I mean, your thoughts? I mean, what does this mean?
Well, it simply means that this whole pretense that human rights were effectively a core principle, it's severely weakened, because everyone now, even if they don't are recognize it as a genocide, they recognize that this is a massacre, an extreme violation of human rights, and they're still sending weapons. Now, if something is a principle, one would support, you know, human rights irrespective of where it is. So we see that the principle itself is abandoned, and this is, again, by the United States and Germany. So I guess, you know, the U.S. has more dirty shirts in its hamper, of course, but I think more have been surprised by the actions of the Germans, who seem to suggest that because of their previous role in history with genocide during the Holocaust, that they have a special obligation to be supportive of Israel by
is very complex, and for a lot of people, I mean, when we look at, sorry to interrupt you, Glenn, but you mentioned with the, it's this German guilt, of course, that the Palestinian people had nothing to do with, that they continue now to support another genocide. And also you said that a lot of countries, they still won't say that the word genocide. I'm going to ask you a question, what actually the Syrian foreign minister today, Faisal Mehrdad, said: if this isn't genocide, then what is genocide?
Yeah, no. Well, this is my point as well, that I think that this strong impulse to excuse everything when it effectively is done by what we would then consider to be one of our own, which is considered to be Israel, one of our own, a part of the West, then obviously the first impulse is always to excuse this. But now the severity of the war crimes and genocide being committed, it makes this impulse to excuse so much more dramatic, and it's to some extent reminiscent of the 19th century. At this point, at this time, there was also the British pushing their idea of a liberal empire, and they very clearly differentiated what happened in the civilized world, which was the West, which they called the garden, and the rest of the world, which was the jungle. The main argument was, when you're out in the jungle, the same rules don't apply. Now, this seems like an effort almost to revive this mentality. Indeed, the language has often been used along these lines as well. But this is a very different world. Not just the global South won't put up with it, but even within the West, as mentioned, civil society. The West is not uniform. Among the public, there is a huge uproar, even in places like the United States, where they getting quite used to having continuous war. There's also a huge uproar against the horrific human rights abuses taking place in Gaza. So so there is tensions within the West, where the geopolitics is in conflict with the morality of this.
Yeah, well, John Geer, would you say that the Western hegemonic front in general has basically discredited themselves and have no right really ever to talk about human rights nor international law? Are we seeing more and more of a realization that we have heard these phrases for forever, but the reality is something else?
Yes, I think, look, I think as far as the political orders in the West were concerned, human rights was a kind of a civilizing mission, a tool to enforce their imperialism and hegemony, which, you know, in the past, the Bible was used when they went to Africa, and notions of racial supremacy. Today, human rights is used has been used as a stick to beat other countries, particularly in the developing world. And there's been a massive shift, even amongst the ordinary people here. You know, I speak to the Muslim community and Muslims who are in the Labour Party who've left who are now voting for independence. And the most common phrase that I hear is, we don't ever want to be lectured by the West on human rights ever again. You know, it's amazing how common that sentiment is these days. So I think it's collapsing before their very eyes. Nobody's going to take the West seriously on morality, on women's rights, on human rights anymore. When you see women and children slaughtered in Gaza, you know, everybody can see it's a genocide when all means of livelihood have been destroyed for a people, and you're not moved by either humanity or any notion of human rights or even international law. That's just a total collapse of your values that you claim to champion.
Well, let's look a little bit closer, Glenn, at these last 6 months, because despite the unbelievable support that the Israeli regime has received from its backers, it has accomplished nothing from a military perspective in Gaza during this time. Your thoughts on that, and what exactly has happened? Because its stated goals, one was to destroy Hamas, and of course the other was to return the captives, that has not happened. Your thoughts of what has happened here from the military perspective?
Well, this is this bears similarities to the Americans' so-called global war on terror. The problem is that what they define as terror is a way of fighting. It's not as a means to an end. It's not a defined enemy. And I think that there's a similar problem with Hamas. It's an idea. It's considered by many to be a resistance movement. So if you're trying to fight Hamas by massacring a civilian population, all they're doing is then fueling support for the resistance. So, you know, for every Hamas fighter that actually fought, they're not going to change much on the ground, which is why this is a very futile attempt. And it's also a great shame. I would say it was a great tragedy for Israel, because it's delegitimizing itself as a state and is fighting a conflict which will only end up putting itself in a much, much worse place. But if I could just have a quick comment by what the former guest just said, I just want to say I agree that this is a much, much wider conflict in terms of collapse of legitimacy of because if you see how the context when this has happened, this is the same time as the U.S. is putting all this I would call it illegitimate economic sanctions on the Chinese. They seized all the central bank funds they could of Russia, something never been done. They hijacked the oil tankers of Iran. You know, they don't even want to sit down and talk to Russia, even after 2 years of war fighting in Ukraine. Diplomacy has been banned. And now you effectively have this war in Gaza, where they keep sending in weapons, even though the ICJ has warned that this is likely a genocide. So it's across the board, you see hegemony collapsing, and not just in power, but in the legitimacy, effectively how what made the legitimacy which the hegemony rested upon. So it, you can't really overstate how dramatic or what huge consequences this conflict will actually have.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jahangir, the Israeli regime's ace of spades has always been propaganda and showing itself stronger than it is and trying to intimidate its enemies. However, the regime no longer has that semblance of invincibility, which it tries to portray to the world. Tell me your thoughts on the importance of this development.
I think it's truly significant because, you know, for 75 years, Israel has maintained this whole idea of its supremacy, not just in terms of racial dominance, but also as a civilizing force, the Judeo-Christian Western values, and that it was some kind of wonderful liberal project, which was a part of Europe in the Middle East, and that, you know, Israel were the good guys, and the ideology was a nationalist ideology which was acceptable. I think that's totally fallen away. I mean, people would not criticize Israel or you know, be afraid to criticize Israel. That's just today, whenever you see somebody supporting Israel, just watch the counter comments on social media. And social media, plus the live streaming of the genocide that we've seen, has changed that totally, because ultimately human beings are all capable of recognizing injustice and oppression and something that is wrong, and that you know, people have self-educated themselves on the whole history of Palestine just by social media. You know, the whole idea of a colonial settler project, young people on social media, wider society in the West as well. Whenever their politicians say something, there's always an answer. Whenever somebody makes a historical claim, somebody comes up with a research into history and counters it. So it's the only thing is that in Western governments, that hasn't shifted yet. So we have a bizarre situation in Britain, for example, where we can't criticize Israel, a foreign state, but we can criticize our own government and its policies openly.
Right. Yeah, similar, I think, also in the United States. Well, Glenn, do you think that one of the reasons the regime has been so brutal, especially during the last 6 months, is that it does not want to lose the deterrence of inflicting fear, and it wants to commit crimes so horrible that the Palestinians would not dare to resist? Your thoughts about that, and if you agree, has the regime been successful with that tactic?
Well, I think this has always been a strategy for Israel, that is to be able to display this overwhelming power. Now, this, of course, is a dilemma. On one hand, if you are overly aggressive and dominate in this way, you're also interpreted as being aggressive. So this, you know, this is a choice. But Israel has favored, you know, overwhelming power. So it would have a proper deterrent effect on anyone who would want to challenge it or threaten it. But here we see now Israel unleashing all this great power and demolishing, you know, Gaza, and this is supposed to have a huge deterrent effect, but you see instead there's continuing fighting back in the area, and it's effectively not working. So I think they're ending up with the worst case now, which is that they already used overwhelming power, mm-hmm. but they're seen as aggressive, but without being able to deter. So there is a huge shift going on. And I would also say, I would agree, I think there's a new generation, especially in the West, coming up now with a different mentality, because at least the former generations, including mine, who, you know, grew up in the 70s, for us, you know, there was always collective guilt because of the horrific crimes committed against the Jewish people, but during the Holocaust. But now you see a new generation who don't necessarily think that this should be, you know, give a green light for Israel to do anything it wants, and that's probably a much healthier attitude to have. So there is a huge shift, I think, in the mentality of the entire population.
Okay.
Social media.
Well, Jahangir, your take on their current truce talks going on in Egypt. How do you see that playing itself out? Do you think that they can be successful, and what would it take in order for truce talks to be successful?
Well, I think we're hearing different things. At the same time, arms are being supplied by countries to Israel. I think at the moment, Israeli society and their government are worried about an Iranian strike, and they're shifting their resources for that reason. But it's difficult to see a ceasefire when Israel has made its goal clear in terms of the total destruction. They had hoped that the Palestinian people would have moved or left, and they haven't. They've been resilient. I mean, this is really a test between faith on the one hand and power, ultimate power, on the other. Doesn't seem to be working. The hostages have not been released. Hamas still seems to be able to fire rockets and kill Israeli soldiers. So there does appear to be confusion in Israel as well with the protests. And the West, on the one hand, is totally committed to the settler colonial project of Israel, but they've got elections in both the UK and the US, and their own populations are becoming increasingly angry, and politics has started to change as well.
Well, Glenn, with growing pressure from various countries and division inside of the Zionist entity itself, do you think the regime totally miscalculated its genocide on Gaza? And do you see the regime exploding from outside pressure or imploding from the inside?
Well, I'll be careful to make predictions, but obviously there's both pressure inside and outside. The inside, you have to keep in mind that if they would agree to a ceasefire now, or even pull out completely of Gaza, many would see this as a defeat in Israel. And obviously for Netanyahu, it will be a huge defeat. But at the same time, they have to be careful not to exhaust themselves, and they also have to deal with the possibility of now the conflict spreading in terms of them pursuing a conflict with Lebanon, with Hezbollah, or potentially even with the conflict with Iran could also escalate, as evident by Israel striking the Iranian embassy. So this can very quickly get out of hand. But it's not, as I just pointed out as well, it's not just this internal dimension in Israel where there's a lot of tensions. It's also from abroad. And I think the elections, especially in the United States, puts a lot of pressure, because this is a very, very unpopular war. And Biden's own electorate are majority now for ending this war. So
okay.
I think there will be more pressure possibly coming even from the Americans, who have so far allowed Israel to do whatever they want.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on the program. Jahangir Mohammed, Director of Center for Muslim Affairs out of Manchester, and Glenn Diesen, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway out of Oslo. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed.
This Qur'an guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Qur'an, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Dear listeners, we have reached the 61st verse of the chapter. Now let's listen to this verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ليس على الأعمى حرج ولا على الأعرج حرج ولا على المريض حرج ولا على أنفسكم أن تأكلوا من بيوتكم أو بيوت آبائكم أو بيوت أمهاتكم أو بيوت إخوانكم أو بيوت أخواتكم أو بيوت أعمامكم أو بيوت عماتكم أو بيوت أخوالكم أو بيوت خالاتكم أو ما ملكتم مفاتحه أو صديقكم ليس عليكم جناح أن تأكلوا جميعا أو أشتاتا فإذا دخلتم بيوتا فسلموا على أنفسكم تحية من عند الله مباركة طيبة كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تعقلون.
There is not upon the blind any guilt, nor upon the lame any guilt, nor upon the ill any guilt, nor upon yourselves if you eat from your own houses, or the houses of your fathers, or the houses of your mothers, or the houses of your brothers, or the houses of your sisters, or the houses of your father's brothers, or the houses of your father's sisters, or the houses of your mother's brothers, or the houses of your mother's sisters, or from houses whose keys you possess, or from the house of your friend. There is no blame upon you whether you eat together or separately. But when you enter houses, give greetings of peace upon each other, a greeting from Allah, blessed and good. Thus does Allah make clear to you the verses of ordinance, that you may understand.
In the previous episodes, we discussed the beginning part of the verse until this part, فَإِذَا دَخَلْتُمْ بُيُوتًا فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ. And we also discussed the different possible meanings of the word buyut, specifically in the previous episode. Now, what is the meaning of this term? فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ. There are some commentaries upon the purpose of the Quranic phrase فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ, which means salute one another. Some commentators believe that it simply means to salute one another. Some commentators, however, say that it means to greet to wife, issues and family. When it says فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ, it is only related to the wife and the issues and family, because they are considered as man himself. And therefore, it is stated in this verse in the form of أنفس.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, about the meaning of فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ, we can also have a look at the verse of mutual cursing in Surah Al-Imran, where we see that such a meaning is shown there, and it shows that sometimes when a person gets relationally close to one another, the word anfus, which is the plural of the form nafs, and it means self or man himself, will be used. The word is applicable there, as Imam Ali's closeness to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is also stated in this way. So this could explain the use of the word anfus, فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ. So it is different from the time when it says فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَيْكُمْ or فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ بَعْضِكُمْ, فَسَلِّمُوا بَعْضُكُمْ عَلَىٰ بَعْضٍ. This is different. Since you are close to one another, you should salute one another. And some commentators say that this verse refers to the houses in which no one lives, and when one wants to enter them, one salutes himself with this sentence: our greeting and our peace will be from our Lord, or our peace be upon us and upon Allah's righteous servants. Assalamu alayna wa ala ibadillahis salihin. So some believe that this is right. We will somehow come to a resolution in the next episode about the meaning of this part of the verse. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the holy month of Ramadan, teaches us reliance upon Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the holy month of Ramadan quickly coming to an end. The last few programs that we have regarding this beautiful month, this month which is the holiest of months, it is the month in which its days are the best of days, its nights are the best of nights, its hours are the best of hours. You know, while we're in the holy month of Ramadan, we have a tendency to not to fully appreciate this blessing, and it is only after the ending of the holy month of Ramadan that we truly realize what a beautiful divine companion we have lost, as Imam Sajjad alayhi salam so eloquently speaks about in his du'as, some of which can be found in Sahifa Sajjadiyya. This losing of this companion and, you know, all the things that we learned and the bounties and the blessings, and a lot of times we don't fully realize everything that we were gaining and achieving in this holy month of Ramadan, and the amount of rewards and blessings and love that was really showered upon every single one of us in this holy month of Ramadan, right? Many of us, unfortunately, we cannot look past the fasting and, you know, being thirsty and being hungry and having to control oneself, you know, so much. We kind of stop at that. We don't rise above these things and realize everything that we were acquiring. And to be honest with you, many of the things that we have acquired and achieved and have been blessed with in this holy month of Ramadan, you know, will be visible in the next life. We will see the fruits and the rewards, and really the countless blessings that Allah the Almighty has stored for every single one of us because of this fasting and this obedience and this worship and this servitude and this obeying the commands of Allah that we did in the holy month of Ramadan.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin-nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-Qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about reliance on Allah and how this is a primary and fundamental thing that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan. You know, of course, when you are fasting from the morning until the night, this is something that is difficult, you know, even though after these amount of days that have passed, we are slowly getting accustomed to this Islamic lifestyle. Because as we had said in our earlier programs, in the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, this holy month of Ramadan teaches us a Islamic lifestyle, right? We rise above these basic material and worldly instincts, such as eating and drinking, right? We also rise above our passions and these various different things. But one of the things that we learn is reliance on Allah, because fasting from morning until night for 29 or 30 days, this takes a lot of trust in the Almighty Allah. And really, those people who have a higher level of reliance and trust and tawakkul, as it is known in Arabic, upon the Almighty Allah, somewhat things become a little bit easier. Now, of course, the fasting in itself, nobody is saying that it becomes, you know, very easy. It still has its hardships, but you know, one is able to bear those hardships a little bit easier, if you will, because you are trusting on this higher source, this supreme being. And I can tell you with all surety and certainty, you know, that the Almighty Allah, He helps those people who rely upon Him and who trust upon Him. It is our responsibility to trust Allah, and it is Allah's, you know, responsibility and duty to keep us in His divine protection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Afghanistan is now battling an invisible foe that threatens its future generations. The World Food Program has sounded the alarm on the rising tide of malnutrition cases, a crisis worsened by the country's ongoing economic challenges and reduced international aid. Marking the World Health Day, the Taliban's Minister of Public Health expresses concern over the malnutrition crisis, calling for international support.
It is clear that Afghanistan is one of the poor countries in the world. There is no doubt that children and mothers are grappling with malnutrition. We need the support of the world in combating the disaster. I call on the UNICEF, WHO and WFP to continue their assistance to our people with poor health conditions, especially those suffering from malnutrition.
The impact of international sanctions and the U.S. policies cannot be overlooked in understanding the gravity of the situation. That is a warning by pediatricians here in Afghanistan. Years of conflict have severely damaged the country's infrastructure, making it a challenge to provide adequate healthcare and nutrition to vulnerable groups. Moreover, recent cuts in international assistance as well as the Western-led sanctions are worsening things.
There are also some foreign factors exacerbating the malnutrition crisis in Afghanistan. Afghan assets that belong to Afghans and are meant to support our economy are frozen. We are witnessing a decline in international health assistance, especially to our children. Some international bodies continue to collaborate, but these are not sufficient. Some organizations that used to support families have ended their missions in Afghanistan.
A lot of people like me are coming to this hospital because their children are malnourished. I think everything boils down to a single problem, economic shortcoming. If our family had enough to eat, our children wouldn't become undernourished. People don't have money and they're not receiving aid anymore.
Experts emphasize that the need for immediate aid cannot be overstated. Afghan families are in desperate need of assistance to combat this malnutrition crisis. The international community must come together to provide the necessary resources and support to save lives and alleviate the suffering of the Afghan people. The economic crisis in Afghanistan is taking a toll on the health and well-being of the war-ravaged nation. Advocates warn that without a significant increase in support, the crisis will further deepen. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
thousands came together for the annual International Kids Day March in the Canadian city of Toronto to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially those in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinian solidarity organizations and communities rallied across from the U.S. consulate, calling on Ottawa and Washington to act urgently to end the Israeli terror campaign and genocide and try to save as many lives as
possible. And this year it's especially important because people are motivated to come out in large numbers to bring an end to this genocide that's taking place in Gaza and underline their commitment to see a free Palestine from the river to the sea and a free Al-Quds, a free Jerusalem, free from Zionism and occupation.
Millions around the world are marching yesterday, today and tomorrow, all week. Thousands of cities and towns across the globe are making Al-Quds Day an international day, a call for justice and freedom, particularly for the Palestinian people as they are facing genocide and war crimes in Gaza.
The city has continued its heavy policing of pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Just 1 week ago, several participants were injured and six others were arrested in the annual Land Day commemoration by the Toronto police, who were captured on camera using excessive force.
So last week, people must have seen the videos by now, but the police completely attacked a peaceful rally, and there was horses involved, and this is what the police do. They're on the side of the Zionists, they terrorize people. You know, a protest, a simple, peaceful protest, you're not allowed. I mean, this is another example of the Palestine exception. That protest is good, it's a liberal, you know, it's a sign of democracy, except when you're talking about Palestine. You can't do that.
Participants also use Quds Day to condemn a recent deadly attack by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate building in Syria's capital, Damascus.
Well, Iran has been subjugated to all forms of aggression at the hands of the Zionist regimes and their backers. But the last crime that Israel have done in destroying the Iranian embassy in Damascus, that is a zero tolerance. Iran will respond, and I think that Iran is being called upon by the people to respond against this Israeli aggression.
As the targeted killing of civilians and the starvation campaign continue, a temporary resident visa program announced by the administration in Ottawa 3 months ago has failed to bring to Canada any Palestinian relatives of Canadians from Gaza. Against that backdrop, families and activists are pressuring for a real arms embargo on Israel. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protesters called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna march.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice, at least.
Representatives of Jewish organizations such as Not In Our Name stressed their continued solidarity with the Palestinian struggles. Organizers said all Austrians must continue to protest against the US-Israeli genocide and their government support for it, despite the repression.
We cannot call ourselves humans, regardless of our nationalities or political views or religions, and be indifferent about what's going on nowadays in Gaza.
Thousands marched in the Austrian capital Vienna in support of the people and the resistance in Gaza as the Israeli genocide war claims more civilian lives. Despite Austria's repression, the state and the police were unable to stop the Palestine solidarity movement. Saturday's demonstration has once again shown that the support for Gaza remains strong in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying the resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war.
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives, except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the alliance of resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
Based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international and economic information, we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian revolution had said during the first days of the war, that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious, and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war, which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al-Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world, since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza, we are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region. We'll elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds, and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities, and those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels. Loud actions have been made, not only in support of the Palestinian people, but in establishing what could turn into a tangible plan to end the occupation of the Holy Land. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
The International Quds Day this year comes following Israel's airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus that killed 7 Iranian military officers. This latest Israeli attack, together with over 6 months of regime's genocide in Gaza, prompted thousands of Iranians to pour into the streets across the country to mark Quds Day.
Recently, there was an incident in which we were all heartbroken and devastated, as 2 of the top Iranian generals were killed and our country's embassy was air targeted. This act was against international and human rights law. As an Iranian and a Jew, we condemn this issue.
Quds Day is commemorated all over the world on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, the Iranian Jew community also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza. This community believes that the United Nations and the Western countries have been totally inactive over the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip.
We are not anti-Semites, but we are anti-crime. We are anti-killing. And in one word, we are anti-Zionist. And we live in peace with each other in Iran, with Jews. But we don't have any problem with Jews. We have problem with genocide, with killing, with Zionists.
We send a message to all young and free people around the world that humanity is in danger today. Hear our voice, our belief, and our goal. Down with Israel.
This year, the International Quds Day comes amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Israel has cut off fuel, electricity, food, and water to Palestinians living in the besieged territory.
Iranians once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and also strongly condemned the recent criminal acts of the Israeli regime leading to the martyrdom of two senior Iranian military personnel. When it comes to violation of human rights, nobody can stay silent. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Thousands flooded the streets across Pakistan to denounce the United States and Israel for their war crimes in Gaza.
The US is a terrorist state. Israel is a terrorist regime. They are spreading terrorism against innocent men, women, and children in Gaza through their relentless attacks. The US and Israel are using their military might to systematically oppress and kill innocent Palestinians in Gaza.
Protesters marking Quds Day voiced their unwavering solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli occupation.
Israel is a fascist and illegitimate regime that is committing war crimes in Gaza by killing innocent men, women, and children on daily basis. The end of Israel is necessary to maintain peace in the world.
Amid chants condemning Israel and the United States, speakers criticized what they called the criminal silence of the world on Israel's war crimes in Gaza.
We demand from the governments, from the Muslim governments, especially the government of Pakistan, to take practical actions. Just lip service is not enough. Just passing resolutions is not enough. Governments should take practical steps for the security of the people of Gaza.
Quds Day is an annual event observed on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan across the world to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
International Quds Day rallies in Pakistan are a manifestation of a solidarity with the Palestinians. The rallies are also a show of unity among Muslims worldwide. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Under the title Flood of the Free, thousands of Syrians and Palestinians along with regional resistance forces rallied in the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus to commemorate International Quds Day. A joint military parade was organized by the Palestinian resistance as a message of strength and determination.
The commemoration of International Quds Day this year comes after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which constituted a strategic shift in the war against the Zionist enemy. It also comes amid the legendary resilience in the Gaza Strip, under the devastating onslaught and the cohesion among all resistance movements participating in this operation.
The Yarmouk camp has witnessed violent battles against terrorism. And today, from the same liberated camp, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, and Palestine vow to keep fighting until the liberation of all occupied territories from the grip of the Israeli terrorist regime and its sponsors. After the military parade, speeches were delivered by representatives of resistance movements.
Today we commemorate International Quds Day, which coincides with the ongoing Israel attacks for the past 6 months on our Palestinian people in Gaza, resulting in a significant number of martyrs and wounded, mostly women and children. The resistance continues and will prevail, and we confirm our absolute support for the resistance both logistically and politically.
Representatives of the resistance praised the profound strategic vision of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as Quds Day